The Second Punic War. It was 23 years before the next Punic War broke out. But how these two nations had hated each other in all these years, how they had quarreled and annoyed and hurt each other in every possible way. There had been in the First Punic War a chief named Hamilcar, who had vowed vengeance upon the Roman people and had declared that sometime his nation would again rise against them, and that they should be conquered even as they had conquered. He took his little son, Hannibal, to the altar in the great temple, placed his hand upon it, and taught him to repeat some form of sacred oath in which he vowed to be forever an enemy to the Romans, and to make the avenging of his father's and his country's wrongs the one ambition of his life. During these 23 years, the little Hannibal had been growing to manhood. He was now in command over the Carthaginian cities and towns in southern Spain. Among these was a Roman city. "If I can but arouse a quarrel with this Roman city," said he, "I can bring about a war with the Romans." Of course, with such an end in view, it was easy enough to make a quarrel, then to pretend great anger, then to proclaim war. "Now," said he to himself, "I am ready to fulfill the oath of my boyhood." The Alps lay between him and Italy. They were steep and rocky and almost impassable in many parts from the great drifts of snow that lay upon them that long year through. Hannibal was not to be discouraged. Giving the command of Spain to his brother, he set forth with a large army, 50,000 foot soldiers and 9,000 horsemen. The Romans, hearing of his march, sent an army against him, but had not a thought that Hannibal could really reach Italy. Such an army as that crossed the cold, barren Alps without roads or places of shelter? Impossible. On this account, the Roman general made no haste, and therefore, when he reached Spain, he found the Carthaginian army far on its way towards Italy. The army of Hannibal had a terrible march. The passes were steep and dangerous. The snow fell, blinding them as they pressed forward. The Gauls rolled great stones down upon them. Fever and cold and starvation reduced their numbers day after day. Hannibal, however, cheered his soldiers on by the hope of victory and plenty awaiting them in the sunny land ahead. From a great height, which gave them a view of the fertile plains below, he pointed to the city of Rome, saying, "See, see, my soldiers, the beautiful glittering city. Have we not, in scaling these great mountains, scaled the walls of the Roman city?" And so, cheered by Hannibal's dauntless hope and courage, they labored on and on. At length they came to a place where the path was broken away, and there lay about them on every side only fearful precipices, threatening and dangerous. "It is of no use. We must stop and build a road," said Hannibal. "Let us to work at once." And how they did work! For 3 long days and nights the mountains rang with their hammers and axes as they pounded and cut a road through the solid rock. But the road was made, and the whole army, men, horses, and elephants, passed through in safety and easily reached the foot of the mountain. These dangers and difficulties in their march made all others seem light to these hardy soldiers. Else, when they reached Italy, with half their number lost, and found the Roman armies drawn up to meet them, they would have been alarmed indeed. The two armies met, and in a great battle on the river Ticinus, the Romans were completely routed. Scipio himself, the brave Roman general, was severely wounded, and the Romans began to realize that in Hannibal they were dealing with no common foe. Scipio retreated. Hannibal followed. If he could defeat him in another battle and get possession of the country round about, he could encamp his soldiers for a winter's rest. Another general having joined Scipio's army, the Romans and the Carthaginians met in another battle. "Prepare for battle," said Hannibal to his men, "by eating a good hot breakfast and getting warmed through and through by the great campfires." "Get ready to cross the river," said the Roman general. "Romans fear neither cold nor hunger." The soldiers obeyed orders. They waded across the river, the snow beating in their faces, the wind shrieking about their ears, until, benumbed by the cold and faint from hunger, all spirit gone out of them, they fell before the swift onslaught of the Carthaginians. But a small portion of their army was left to tell the story of their misfortune and defeat. After this, Hannibal established his soldiers for a comfortable winter. The Romans, not discouraged, prepared to raise fresh armies. Spring came. A new general, Flaminius, was appointed. Hearing that Hannibal had already set out for Rome, he followed quickly after and overtook him near Lake Trasimenus. In the little valley he pitched his tents, having no fear because he believed the Carthaginian army was yet far ahead. In the morning he prepared to march. A dense fog concealed the end of the valley so that the Romans could see but a very little distance beyond. Suddenly a great shout arose, the signal for battle rang out, and the Romans found themselves surrounded on every side. A terrible battle followed. Never has history recorded one more dreadful in its slaughter and horror. With such desperation did the Romans and the Carthaginians fight that an earthquake is said to have taken place close by, and neither side knew of it. The general, Flaminius, and 15,000 men were slain, and hundreds were drowned in the lake. When news of another defeat reached Rome, the city was in the greatest possible alarm. They made Fabius Maximus dictator. He was a cautious man and resolved to risk no more battles with Hannibal, but to follow him from place to place, hoping to bring him into difficulties and at length to tire him out. For a long time this method of warfare was pursued, and it was succeeding better than even Fabius himself knew. But the command of the Roman army was changed, and again the two armies met in battle. Another terrible defeat for the Romans. 45,000 soldiers killed, and among them a consul, and so many brave knights that 3 bushels of their rings were said to have been gathered from their dead bodies on the battlefield. After this battle, one of Hannibal's generals begged him to hurry on to Rome. "It is not time," answered Hannibal. "Alas, O Hannibal, thou knowest how to win a victory, but not how to afterward make use of it." It seems as if the general's advice was good. At any rate, Hannibal, had he followed it, would have done no worse than he did do. He led his forces to a wealthy, luxurious city, and there, resting through another winter, his men grew lazy and weak, and never again fought with such daring and strength. They grew careless, too, and began to think success certain for them, no matter how idle they might have been. The Romans, on the other hand, devoted their winter to preparing for the spring, raising new armies, collecting arms, and storing away provisions for the coming campaign. One of the first things the Romans did in the spring was to march to this city in which the Carthaginians had wintered and attack it. Hannibal was away attacking smaller Roman towns at the time, and made no attempt to save it. He continued his ravages about the country, once coming close to the gates of Rome, but he dared not attack it yet. He was waiting for help from his brother Hasdrubal. So the days went on, opportunities slipped by, Hannibal's army weakened, the Roman army grew strong, and worse yet for Hannibal, Hasdrubal's plans became known to the Romans. His approach was cut off, and a sad defeat followed. Thousands of his men were slain. He himself, fighting with the courage of desperation, rushed into the very midst of his enemies and was killed. One Roman beheaded him and hastened with it to Hannibal, who, knowing nothing of this battle, was awaiting his brother's arrival. The head was tossed into the midst of the camp by the Roman who had killed Hasdrubal. The unfortunate general, gazing upon the horrible sight and recognizing in the ghastly features those of his much-loved brother, sank upon the ground, crying, "O Carthage, I see thy doom! I see thy doom!" Scipio all this time had been warring against the Carthaginians in Spain, winning battles on every side, until it might well be said the Romans were masters of the whole country. The Carthaginians were in great distress, and there seemed nothing to do but to recall Hannibal to their aid at home. It was a sad call to Hannibal. Still, he could only obey, and as soon as preparations could be made, he set sail for Carthage. On his way, he stopped to make some terms of peace with Scipio. The meeting of these two great generals must have been a strange one to them both, for they were at the time the two greatest men in the world. They could agree upon no terms, and the great battle of Zama followed. The Carthaginians fought with the utmost bravery, but they were defeated. In despair, Hannibal hastened to Carthage to advise that peace be made at once. Poor Hannibal! He had been so brave, had endured so much, we find ourselves almost sorry that he should have been defeated. Still, had Rome fallen into his hands at this time, it would have been a sad thing for civilization. For Rome then represented high culture and great progress, and the Carthaginians, brave as they were, could not have done otherwise had this great center of civilization and progress fallen into their hands than to have overpowered it with their own semi-civilization, and so have to a great extent destroyed it. Hannibal had started forth into this war a brave, courageous youth. He returned to his country a weary, worn soldier of 45, all his proud hopes gone, his brother dead, his army destroyed, and his enemy even then at the gates of his city waiting to take possession of it. Peace was made, a peace more humiliating even to the Carthaginians than that of the first war. Scipio, on his return, was given a splendid triumph, and was always after honored by the name of Scipio Africanus.